Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettea, along with Charlie Long in studio. Steve Geller will join us at 5:45 for our Pick 6 segment that we'll have this week at 4:20. Chrissy Floyd, who covers both the NFL and college football for USA Today, will join us. She had an interview with Drew Brees and talk about his comments on who he would pick as the Saints' new head coach, and also about the Saints quarterbacking situation. At 4:40, Zach Nagy, publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated, will join us. And it was officially announced 13 freshman players that LSU has signed. They'll join the team midterm. So they'll be in spring drills, and we'll get Zach's comments on Nussmeier and also 13 freshmen joining the LSU football team come this spring. Charlie, it was officially made known today that Anthony Weaver, virtual interview. Man, I'm getting old when I look at my grandkids and see how quick they're growing up. But in the mirror, don't lie neither. But man, I scouted Anthony Weaver when he came out of Notre Dame. He was a 2002 pick that year, second round pick. Went to the Ravens. I think he played 8 years in the NFL. I think he almost split it, like 4 years with the Ravens, 4 years with the Texans. Then he became the defensive line coach and the assistant head coach of the Baltimore Ravens this year. He was the defensive coordinator for the Miami Dolphins. I know a little bit about Anthony because Austin Clark, who comes to our Louisiana line camp every year, Anthony Weaver kept him on the staff. He's the defensive line coach. We all call him Cal Bear. We get interviews with Cal Bear every year, and he talks about defensive line play, and he's a Pete Jenkins protege. So Anthony Weaver gets an interview, and a guy that has played in the NFL, certainly coached in the NFL. It'll be one of many interviews that'll come down the pike for the Saints. But first one today, being Anthony Weaver, and he's a guy that a lot of people in this league thinks eventually he'll get a shot as a head coach.
Yeah, I agree as well, Mike. And as far as Anthony Weaver's playing career, he started with Baltimore, as you mentioned, 2002 second round pick, was there until 2005. Then he was with the Texans from 2006 through 2008. This was his first year as a DC in Miami. I mean, he had been a defensive assistant, mostly, as you mentioned, a defensive line coach throughout his time as a coach in the NFL. But as a DC in Miami, it's kind of intriguing because what he did this year with that Dolphins defense, the Dolphins didn't make the playoffs this year. Now, granted, a lot of that was because of Tua missing some time. Their offense wasn't that great. Their defense was still really solid. I mean, they were top 10 in yards allowed per game, top 10 in points allowed per game. As you mentioned, he's probably going to get a head coaching opportunity at some point.
Yeah, I think this is kind of his initial shot to go in for an interview. Man, I remember talking to Jim Haslett about this. He was like, man, the first time I went in for an interview, I was lousy. I was terrible. There was no way they were going to hire me after that. And he said, I went to a couple more, then finally getting the Saints job. So for Anthony Weaver, it's an opportunity to get that initial interview. And I think somewhere down the line, either in college or pro football, Anthony's going to get his opportunity.
Yeah, and I agree. So it may not even happen this offseason cycle, because once again, he's just a one-time DC, and you know, you're kind of be taking a swing there with someone like Anthony Weaver to be your next head coach. But it's worth, you know, checking out, doing your due diligence, so to speak. He's just one of the names that's on the board at this point, Mike. I mean, we've listed off at least half a dozen, going upwards on 8, probably going to be at 10 very soon as well.
Man, the Jets, what it is, like the 15 Jets are or
already,
16?
Yeah, I mean, the Jets are already past like 15 at this point, so like they're interviewing everyone. But
and I think this afternoon they announced that they want to interviews. They put in the kind of work requests for Steve Spagnuolo.
Oh, wow.
And so have the Raiders, the Las Vegas Raiders. Now, yeah. Steve, he's got some skins. What he did with the Giants, they won a Super Bowl, and they beat that undefeated New England Patriots team. He became a head coach with the Rams. That didn't work out too well. Then he came here, and it was bad.
It was terrible.
Oh, that was as bad a defensive team. And after 1 year, and Sean Payton decided we got to do something else, he goes to Kansas City, and it's like a different coach, totally different coach. And he's been a big part of that coaching staff that has went to all these Super Bowls and has got a chance to three-peat it.
Well, you would think that Spags would be the more coveted piece than the opposite side of the football, which the Jets have just officially completed an interview with Matt Nagy, the OC of the Chiefs. It's like, I don't
know.
If you watch the Chiefs play, Mike, you and I both know this. It's the defense that oils the engine. Yes, they have Pat Mahomes, but if you're looking at their potential for a three-peat, which has never been done in NFL history, it's going to be the defense that carries the load. So what Spags has done there is the DC's been fantastic. He's one of the most important coordinators in the entire NFL.
Yes, he is.
And so if you're looking at one of the coordinators for a head coaching position from the Chiefs, I think it would be Spags. I don't think it would be, you know, Matt Nagy.
That would be my opinion. Pass on Matt Nagy. I kind of saw what happened in Chicago. Now, again, he wasn't given a lot of help sometimes. And
he got run out of Chicago,
yeah,
right?
That personnel, man, they similar to the Saints. You got to change up how you pick in players, how you bring in players in. Even though it wasn't officially announced, you can see it kind of contract-wise. And it was funny that we talked about this Monday night. We had Joe Curry on, who I think does as good a job as anybody of breaking down the salary cap and the type moves that could create money. And Ryan Ramczyk, who restructured his deal, and this is based off his 2021 contract extension. And this is really an accounting deal. And it's very similar to when Drew Brees retired. And you allowed two post June 1st designations where you can break up the money. So in his restructure today, it eliminated the $8 million base salary for 2025. It reduced the base salary to 1.255, and it freed up $16.7 million in cap space. It allows the Saints to carry Ramczyk on the roster for $12.3 million until June 1st. Now, prior to that, the cap figure would have been $29 million. There's still $23 million in dead money. So now you're able to split it. If you and that's what's going to happen after June 1st. He's going to announce his retirement, and you got to carry it. It's not like when you retire, that gets wiped off the books. It doesn't work that way. So they'll split it. There'll be $11.083 million in 2025, $11.98 million in 2026, and you can do it for two, so there'll be somebody else. But basically, this is an accounting deal to try to get you down under the salary cap. And even now, with that deal, you still over $50 million over the caps. But it was so funny. Joe Curry, when I asked him about it, he said, this will probably be the first move they make with Ryan Ramczyk. And he called it exactly like it happened today.
And Ryan's degenerative knee issues just kind of ended his career.
Sad.
And it really is sad, Mike, because when he played, he was one of the best tackles in the game of football. Three-time All-Pro, two-time second-team All-Pro, one-time first-team All-Pro. Ryan Ramczyk was fantastic. He earned that contract that he got from the Saints, but there's a reason he didn't play at all this year. And so
his body broke down on him.
It did. And so you're looking at Ryan Ramczyk's future. As you mentioned, Over the Cap has a great article on this from Jason Fitzgerald, where he basically says that it clears the way for him to retire post June 1st.
Yeah,
and exactly. This was always going to happen. It's kind of a step to getting the Saints back towards cap compliance, but they still have a long way to go, as you mentioned. $50 million over the cap in 2025, which is $27 million worse than the next closest team. So, yes, Ryan Ramczyk is going to be retiring from pro football in all likelihood. And it helps the Saints.
Take a look at him today. He looks like
a
tight end. He's like a 240-pound guy today. And when he was playing with the Saints, after he signed the contract, Bobby and I got to talk to him, and he was like, I told him, man, you get paid like a left tackle. And he said, yeah, finally.
Yeah.
One of our right tackles, he said, get paid like a left tackle. And then, God giveth and he taketh away too, because he was as good a right tackle as there was in the NFL. And then his knee just kind of you could see it deteriorating, and it affected his play. When he did play, you could tell he wasn't the same guy. And, man, you feel for him. Because at his age, he could still play if it wasn't for the knee. But that's what – you don't leave this game on your terms.
He's 30,
you leave
Mike.
It on somebody else's terms. 30-year-old?
Yeah.
Man, some of the top tackles in this league are
30.
Trent
Williams is like 36 or like 37. He could play easily another half decade if he didn't have the knee issue. So, and, I've seen this kind of circulating on social media that – Now the final member left from that 2017 draft class is Alvin Kamara, the lone man standing.
That's it.
It's kind of sad.
Yeah, because, boy, they hung their hats on that 2017 draft class, but all of them are gone today but one, Alvin Kamara. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870. Chrissy Freud will join us. She's the college and pro football writer for USA Today. Had a conversation with Drew Brees about the Saints coaching search and also about their quarterbacks. We'll have Chrissy on right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike to tell you along with Charlie Long. Chrissy Freud is kind of caught up at the airport. We'll try to get back with her a little bit later during the show. Let's go to our Oakland Hard Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Jimmy and Gretna. Jimmy, in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, look, I wanted to bring this up. I know y'all are talking a lot about the head coaching gig for the Saints. You know, what's worrying me with that is there's so many teams looking at the same time. It's kind of like the quarterback situation. I don't think we're going to draft our way out of that scenario on the short term. But I wanted to turn things over to the Pelicans. And you know, Zion played last night. Of course, they lost, but he played pretty well. I know they're resting him tonight. Tickets are like $5 on the secondary market, Charlie. Ticket demand is very low. My question to you guys is this. A few years ago, Drew Brees was retiring, Mike, and, you know, it kind of did the whole passing of the torch, if you will, figuratively or, you know, whatever. It kind of to Zion, right? You remember that.
I sure do.
I just want to get your take on that. I know people are saying, hey, look, let's trade him. He's lazy. You can see if you watched the game last night how dominant he can be. Now, the question is, can he stay healthy? Is his heart in it? Is he trying to get, you know, traded out of here? You know, when I think about it, Mike and Charlie, we had Chris Paul land in our lap in the last 20 years, one of the greatest point guards in the history of the NBA. Anthony Davis, like it or not, probably going to be a Hall of Famer. He's going to play for 20-something years and have all kinds of numbers. And we have Zion fall in our lap. Three guys that, you know, and I'm not saying Zion's Hall of Fame talent, but he's a freak of nature. But to have three guys this level fall in our lap, we've already fumbled away two of them. I hate for us to go down that road. And, you know, the Anthony Davis trade worked out on paper. We got the Herb Jones pick out of that trade with the Lakers. But Brandon Ingram might walk now. So I guess I bring that up, Mike and Charlie, because, and look, we were lucky in that trade. Typically, you might get half the value on a star player. So what's your take on how things have transpired the last few years as far as taking over that torch and the leader, the sports figure of the city? And is it too late, or do you think there's still something left possibly for Zion here?
No, he hasn't taken that torch.
No.
From Drew Brees? No.
I refer to Nick Friedell, one of our favorites, Odyssey NBA insider, who I think we'll be getting on tomorrow, which I'm really excited.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Nick made a great point. Just, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And it feels like it's been that way with Zion for quite some time. And look, like, yes, it was awesome to see him back on the court last night. The windmill dunk, 360 dunk that he pulled off against Minnesota. You're like, you see the flashes, right? But can he stay on the floor?
And he's
not playing tonight. And they're being extra careful with him because they don't want him to re-aggravate this, you know, hamstring issue that's just been bugging him and bugging him and bugging him year after year after year. So, Jimmy, to answer your question, no, he is not taking the torch at all. Mike, you and I agree with that 100%.
But I ain't giving him away.
I'm not giving him away either. I think by the trade deadline, when we talked with, I think it was Chris Dodson, who told us this, he's just like, by the trade deadline, it is significantly more likely that Brandon Ingram is the one that's moved than Zion Williamson. And you should move Brandon Ingram at this point. Because if you don't, as you mentioned, Jimmy, you're going to let him walk for nothing. And that is the one thing you cannot do as a small market team. Just can't do it.
You've got him. Okay, you got Zion long term. Contract.
You have him locked on for at least the next 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, so I'm not giving him away.
No.
Now go to the Red Cross if you want to give away stuff.
Because if you move him at this point with all of his injury history and all of the, you know, the question marks about him, then you're going to get pennies on the dollar. And you're going to get probably pennies on the dollar for Brandon Ingram, but at least you get something for him instead of letting him walk in the offseason. So Zion's a different case. He's under contract. He's going to be here for the next couple of years. You just got to hope it gets better.
Thank you, Jimmy. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Zach Nagy, who's the publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated. We kind of moved him up in the lineup. Zach, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Bob and I were talking about this Monday. The one take we got from the Texas Bowl was how well the young kids played up front, offensive line. Man, if you'd have told me that before the game, I would have never believed you. They did a really good job. Now, I will say this, Baylor, they're not loaded with talent on the defensive side of the football, but they really held up well in pass protection, and they had some pretty good holes for the running backs to run through. That was the one real positive take I take from that, because we knew a lot about Tre'Davious Green and him catching the football. Chris Hilton late in the year showed us the flash that we also saw in the Texas Bowl. We didn't know anything about these young guys up front along that offensive line. Man, they played damn well.
Yeah, no, first of all, Mike, appreciate you for having me on as always. And what you've always told me is that your second unit on the offensive line has to be just as good as the first. And for me, you saw that group kind of take strides in the right direction there. There was Tyree Adams. You saw some Cohen Echols, Bordelon. You saw some action in there with the second team that ultimately did have to start in the bowl game because of all the NFL draft entrants. So obviously I was pleasantly surprised with that unit. Fast forward to the 2025 season, and you kind of have a nice mix coming in, don't you now? You have a lot of youngsters that can take that next step. You bring in some savvy veterans like Josh Thompson, Braylon Moore, maybe another offensive lineman. So in the trenches, you're looking like you're going to be in a really good spot with a mix of some youngsters, some veterans, some guys that are going to take that next step, and some guys that really showed out in the Texas Bowl. I was very impressed with Tyree Adams on that left side.
One of the things, too, is, as you brought up, two guys that are veterans, one that will play center. I'm not sure about the Northwestern guy because I've seen him play both right tackle and right guard. I know he's a right-handed guy. That's where he'll play. He'll play as a strong side guy and maybe interior. I think they're still looking for one guy that can play tackle. One more guy. And a lot of people thought it might have been Pritchard from Alabama, but it looks as though maybe the Cornhuskers threw quite a bit of money at him and looks as though he's trending toward Nebraska.
Yeah, and you're absolutely spot on there. You went out. You got Braylon Moore to take on that center spot. You got Josh Thompson, who to me, and you it sounds like, is an interior offensive lineman, a guy who can play on the inside. If we're going to go from left to right here, you got Tyree Adams. You got DJ Chester slotting to his natural spot of guard at that left guard spot. Braylon Moore at the center. Josh Thompson at right guard. And then you're going to sit back and wonder, what do they do with that right tackle spot? Do you throw Weston Davis in the mix? Do you throw in another youngster? Or do you go out in the portal and try to find a savvy veteran? And to me, it seems like the portal could be the best way to go. You're spot on with Elijah Pritchett, the Alabama transfer. There was some buzz that he was going to try to make his way in town for a visit. Ultimately checked in with Nebraska. They kind of answered all the questions that he had, and he committed and shut things down with them. So now you're kind of back at the drawing board to see if you want to take another offensive lineman. You got some time here, but nonetheless, they are going to try to see what they can do in that spot.
Zach, I remember the last time we had you on, you kind of talked about the two positions that need to get bolstered in the portal were offensive line and safety. Offensive line, it seems like they've kind of attacked a little bit, but safety, it feels kind of the next spot that they need to really address. And I know that you've been reporting on some DBs that have come in for some visits. So what's kind of the latest on all of that?
Yeah, so when it comes to the defensive backfield right now, you retooled that cornerback spot in a really good way. I feel very comfortable in that room, as do a lot of people internally. And then you switch gears to that safety room, and you're razor thin. I mean, Charlie, you got Jordan Gilbert. You got Deshaun Spears, Javion Toviano, Joel Rogers. Those are the four pieces that you're really working with in there. You can throw in Austin Ausberry as well. Those are five players right there, but there's a lack of competition, a lack of true talent level there. So fast forward to the portal. You try to get some guys in that area. Earlier this week, they hosted Keontae Scott, an Auburn transfer defensive back who's kind of benefiting from that Diego Pavia ruling that's allowing guys who play JUCO ball to get an extra year of eligibility. He spent 2 years at the JUCO level, 3 years at Auburn, and now he's got an extra year of eligibility. He got to campus for a visit. He was in for 2 days. Seems like it was a beneficial visit for both parties. They went and got some food, kind of went around campus, sat down with the staff, had those one-on-one meetings. Things went well there. We'll see what ultimately happens down the stretch. And then within the next 24 hours, you're going to bring North Carolina State defensive back to Marcus Cooley to town. That's the big fish. That's a top five safety in the portal, one of the top 10 available guys in the portal right now. He'll be in town for a visit to Baton Rouge. We'll see how things trend in that direction there, but this is a coveted player right now. He's visited Ole Miss. He'll get LSU under his belt. He's also got Missouri, Kentucky visits lined up as well. So we'll see what he ultimately does within his process before he ultimately shuts things down. LSU will get him in town, and that's a coveted guy, and they like him at the safety role. So we'll see what happens there, but Those are the two defensive backs that are on their big board right now, in Keontae Scott and Demarcus Cooley.
Zach, you wrote this morning, 13 freshmen, midterm guys, you'll get to play in the spring. The thing that jumped out at me, we knew about DJ Pickett and Harlan Berry. Having J.D. LaFleur come in early, I think is big, too, because there's a spot there for him. As a spotted tight end, because we know Coach Kelly wants to play multiple tight ends. But it's offensive line when you got Solomon Thomas, Tyler Miller, Brent Bordelon, Carius Kern, all coming in the spring. People say, oh, they can't help you. All I know is Emory Jones and Will Campbell were freshmen and played. Now, not every guy that you bring in is going to be one of those two guys, but it does go to show you, and I see it a lot more in college football today than ever before, teams saying, you know what, our best shot is the freshman, the 18-19-year-old young man. Put him in there. Because if we redshirt him and he plays, we're not going to have him for too long if he's really good. Because those tackles today are so coveted by the National Football League. I think that's the story of Thomas, Kern, Miller, and Bordelon coming in midterm.
Yeah, I think you're spot on, Mike. And I love what you said about J.D. LaFleur, first of all. This is a true blocking tight end that can come in and enter the mix in a big way. He's a blocking guy, put his hand in the dirt, 6'4", 250. Just a unit of an 18-year-old that can step in and make an impact during spring ball. So I'm glad you addressed that. And then obviously switch gears to the offensive line. And Carius Kern's a dude. This is a guy who can really step in and enter the mix on day one once he steps on campus. And Brian Kelly alluded to that on National Signing Day, just talking about from a physical standpoint, physicality standpoint even. This is a guy who's SEC ready. So I have high hopes for a guy like Carius Kern to step in as well. Obviously, five-star Solomon Thomas was a late addition to this 2025 signing class. You got some guys that are going to enter the mix come spring ball. It's going to be a competitive group for Brad Davis in the trenches, and it's imperative to get these guys to campus. You sign four offensive linemen, and you get all four of them to campus a semester early, get acclimated to a college regime, get acclimated to spring ball, carry that momentum into the summer, then you go into fall camp, and you're really going to have the juices flowing. You're really going to have a competitive group over there. Like I said before, that mix between youngsters and veterans that are coming in through the portal, I really feel very confident in what they're doing in the trenches, considering you're losing four starters in Will Campbell, Emory Jones, Garrett Dellinger, and Miles Frazier.
The other guy, too, I threw in there, Brent Bordelon. Man, he's a man out there. He's kind of built like his pop. Ben Bordelon, who was, man, he was a really good football player at LSU. He's bigger than Bo. And I think he's an interior player. I think he's either going to be a center or a guard for LSU. But, man, he's built like a 23-year-old. If you walk up to him, he is a big man. And I think he may be able to see some playing time as a freshman.
He is. And you know what? You talked about his pops, and I think it's fantastic. It's fantastic. There's some legacy players in this signing class. You got J.D. LaFleur. Yeah. He's a legacy. Brett Bordelon, he's a legacy. I think it's great. It helps build a culture. And Brett, like you alluded to, that's a big boy. Seeing him on the sidelines pregame, that's a big guy. And if all things can go accordingly, I really do expect him to get some playing time sooner rather than later. But Brad Davis is a mastermind of a recruiter. We've seen that time and time again. He got four blue chippers to campus already. I love what he's doing in the trenches right now for the long haul. And obviously it starts with players like Carius Kern, Solomon Thomas, Tyler Miller, and of course, like you said, Brett Bordelon.
Zach, going back to the tight end position that Mike kind of brought up earlier, I remember when we were talking with, you know, about kind of the expected players that left LSU into the portal, maybe one of the more unexpected ones was Kamorian Pimpton. I mean, you still bring back Tre'Davious Green and you added Sharp from the portal, and we also talked about, you know, the freshmen that are coming in too, but you also have, you've been reporting on an expected visit from Donovan Green from Texas A&M as well, so what's the latest on that?
Yeah, Donovan Green's a player who's a unique one. For me, in 2022, he was a freshman All-American, played a big-time role for A&M in year one with the program. Fast forward to 2023 of his second year, and he suffered a torn ACL. Now we move into 2024, and he didn't quite get the playing time that he would have expected. So it's a head-scratcher for sure, considering you got Bower Sharp, you got Tre'Davious Green, you got J.D. LaFleur. Where does he come in to get some immediate playing time? And I think it's a matter of him wanting a fresh start, a change of scenery, potentially see what can happen there. LSU's recruiting him, West Virginia, Indiana. You got some heavy hitters that are pushing for him. LSU's going to bring him in for a visit on Friday. He'll be in for 2 days on Friday and Saturday. We'll see what the buzz is after that visit. We'll see if LSU can make up some ground there. They're not pressed for a tight end right now, obviously, considering you've got some pieces there. Certainly, I'd like them to bring in a blocking tight end, of course, but I don't make the big bucks like they do. But nonetheless, you go out and you bring him in for a visit just to check things out, and we'll see what happens come Saturday evening once he departs campus. But it's nice to get an SEC transfer in town, of course.
Zach, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it, bud. I know we had to kind of move things around, but, man, always you do a great job, and think a lot of you, but, man, keep up the great work.
Thanks, Zach.
Appreciate you, Mike. Appreciate you, Charlie. Y'all have a good one. Thank you.
All righty. Zach Nagy, publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated. You can follow him at ZNagy20 on X. We'll be back. Chrissy Freud's ready to join us right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long in studio. And on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talk and text line, we have on with us Chrissy Freud. Chrissy takes care of things, college full and also pro football for the USA Today. And Chrissy, thanks so much for joining us. I hope the flight, everything went well with it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's been pretty hectic with the weather and everything. I was kind of shocked, though, because, I mean, all the weather reports came out that everything was going to be fine. And I'm wondering, I mean, I'm over here by Atlanta and everything seems to be fine. It said it was canceled due to operational issues. So I'm wondering if that's the plane or the weather at this point. But certainly I've finally got it fixed apparently like 5 minutes ago. So hopefully nothing else goes wrong. And for now, the Cotton Bowl is still on for me. I did not expect to receive that today, about an hour before I was supposed to go on with you guys.
Thanks so much. You got a chance to talk to Drew Brees yesterday about the head coaching spot. And you wrote about the fact that his endorsement went to Aaron Glenn, a guy that he played with the Saints. And if anything on the resume for Aaron Glenn, I'd put what happened Sunday night with a depleted defensive team, what they did to the Vikings. So tell us a little bit about Drew's comments about Aaron Glenn.
Yeah, he just talked about kind of the way that he's very much for the players, just as much as he values what he does scheme-wise and the staff he can create. It's the way that he's able to connect to these guys is kind of what he said. And he kind of said, I mean, the Saints, obviously, whenever they change over and what's going to happen during the offseason, there's a lot of things to rebuild. And I think that what he looks at the most is who can rebuild the best. And he puts his trust, it seems to be, in Aaron Glenn. And he also said, I mean, not just that he's great with interacting with players, but he's an exceptional teacher. And that he thinks that it's going to accentuate what New Orleans currently has in the locker room with the talent. I mean, that was one thing that Drew kind of went into, is that he thinks he kind of took the approach that a lot of the issues the Saints had were related to injury rather than talent and things of that nature and coaching, which he didn't really mention. And, you know, among the fan base, a lot of people are pointing to a lot of things other than injury. So I think it just comes down to Aaron Glenn's experience with the Saints, his connection to the Saints, and then also the success that he's had elsewhere. I mean, he's going to be hotly pursued by at least three teams that I've seen so far. So it's going to be interesting to see who gets him, but there's no question he's going somewhere.
Yeah, he's going to have some opportunities a couple different places. Did he bring up what he thought would happen 2025 is from a quarterback standpoint? Because for all of us, I know the fans not going to like this, but Derek Carr, I think, is going to be back. And that's – to me, there's a financial part of this that you have to understand, and there's no star quarterback in this draft class that you have to give up a lot, and you got a lot of holes on this football team. Did he talk about the quarterback situation for the Saints?
Yeah, he did talk about that. He didn't really discuss Derek Carr and his solidity there that much, but he did go into Jay Kaner and Spencer Rattler, and I think kind of the synopsis of all that is they have had there are rookie growing pains from time to time, but he thinks that both of them suit the offense very well. But the other thing he mentioned that I think that we all have to take into account is what type of offense are the Saints going to run next year, because the coaching staff of the Saints is going to be largely different next year. So it's going to be curious to see kind of the adjustments that they make. But he basically said that he thinks that both of them have a lot of special qualities and unique traits, and that he thinks that they made the most of their opportunity, which is code for, I don't want to tell you what I think.
I got you. I know exactly where you're going.
To a certain extent, but I think that he appreciates some of the things that those guys have done. And we have to consider, as frustrating as it is for the fan base, just the circumstances. Neither of these guys have a significant amount of in-game reps, and both of them were thrown into the fire with no notice whenever they took the field. So, I mean, you have to be ready whenever your name is called upon, but it was the most unideal of unideal situations. It happened twice in that season, and then they didn't consistently stick with one guy. They kind of went back and forth before going over to Spencer Rattler, and so I think they were up against a lot more adversity than people might take into account. I mean, as cliche as that sounds, I think that just getting into the head of a rookie quarterback or a quarterback without a lot of in-game reps, it's a lot more difficult than people would like to think.
Chrissy, I'll get your opinion on this, because I think with Aaron Glenn, he's going to get a spot. The big horror for him is going to be how that offense is run. Because, okay, you don't know both sides of the football. You're either a defensive-oriented guy or an offensive-oriented guy. And he is. He certainly, as a player, as a coach, has been on the defensive side of football. I think the big horror for him would be who runs his offense, who's going to be his quarterback coach. And I thought about that when Teddy Bridgewater says, you know what, I'm going to give up high school coaching and I'm going to go coach with the Lions. And mm-hmm. I would wonder a little bit, because there's some connections there with Teddy. Would he think about bringing in Teddy Bridgewater as, I don't know if his OC, but quarterback coach, passing game coordinator? He's played in this league, and it's not like, you know, because in today's world, a lot of these players are, man, what? You telling me to do that? You ain't never played in this game before. You can't tell that to Teddy Bridgewater, Aaron Glenn.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see who he decides to bring over. But based on what Drew Brees said, if he told me that if he could pick someone, since the Saints have had kind of a habit of hiring within, he says that in recent history, he said he wants Clint Kubiak. So, okay. I mean, if they take somebody from within, he would be trusting of Clint Kubiak all the way up to the head coaching position. So I think, from at least the eyes of Drew Brees, that the offensive coordinator, they should absolutely retain him. I mean, he really liked what he did in his first game. His first year with the team, he said that he really liked the shifts, the movement, the run game scheme, and then the play action that came off of that. So I think he wants to see the Saints continue to do all of those things. And I mean, it was very polarizing, because I released that as well from our interview. Very polarizing, because the first two, but really when you step back, Drew Brees has a really fantastic argument here, even though a lot of people don't like Clint Kubiak because of the way that the rest of the season went. But the first two games of the season is as healthy as the team was. And it's really important to go back just through the timeline of injury, because it's even more extensive. And I feel like people have kind of forgotten about how much it's really affected the team. But they put two back-to-back just awesome offensive performances together, combining for 91 points over those first two games. And so you kind of ask yourself, there were some other factors that went into it, but if the team had stayed fully healthy, could they have continued that consistently under Clint Kubiak? And then also just his first year. So what can he do in his second year? So I think there should be a case made, and Drew Brees would obviously agree, that maybe Clint Kubiak should be retained in some capacity.
Chrissy, before we let you run, you mentioned the Cotton Bowl. I just wanted to ask you about it, because Ohio State versus Texas in Arlington, it's very, very exciting. I can't wait for it this Friday. And what have you seen from Ohio State so far? Mike and I have talked a little bit about it, where they just basically demoed Tennessee and then Oregon back-to-back. I mean, can anyone stop this Buckeyes team at this point?
I want to see how Texas covers Jeremiah Smith.
Yeah, I don't know
good
if anyone
ruck.
Really can. Yeah,
good ruck.
I think that Jeremiah Smith, it's early, but he looks like a generational talent.
Yes, he does.
It's the way that he's, I mean, it seems like every single time that I watch an Ohio State game, he's broken one record or another. You can hardly believe that he's really just a freshman. And I think that that's by far their most key and dominant player. And then Will Howard has had several explosive performances as well. And Texas's secondary has been pretty good, but I mean, it's also been suspect at times. And so if Will Howard and the Ohio State Buckeyes can get things going through the passing game with Jeremiah Smith, and Texas can't keep up and can't cover him, I think it's going to really spell demise for them.
Chrissy, thanks so much for joining us. I know everything was kind of working in different directions. Good luck. I hope all travels are good for you.
Thanks, Chrissy.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much,
buddy. Appreciate it. Chrissy Freud, who covers both college football and the NFL for USA Today, had that interview with Drew Brees, and she gave basically Drew told her about what he thinks about quarterback position, also who he would pick, and that would be Aaron Glenn as head coach. We'll be back to finish it off here on our number one of sports talk right after this break on the Big 870 WWL. Want to thank Zach Nagy and Chrissy Floyd for joining us this afternoon, covering both LSU, college football, the NFL. Hey, when we come back, be trusty. Hold on. I'll go right to you. I know you want to talk about Cliff Kingsbury as a possible candidate as head coach of the Saints. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break.